Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Here we are, Friday, September 20th, 2013, on The Savage Nation. Here are all the news headlines. Al-Qaeda seizes a Syrian border town. Congratulations, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and Barack Obama. Congratulations, Democrats. The Islamic State of Iraq has seized complete control of a Syrian border town. I hope you sleep well tonight. Meanwhile, the House GOP has shocked everyone by actually defunding Obamacare as a rider to the spending bill that the Dems want. Yeah, you know that's not going to last, but there it is. Michael Savage dissected John McCain's Pravda commentary like no one else in the media. It's on michaelsavage.com. And here's Obama, the president, who doesn't realize it's not a monarchy. He says, the Republicans are trying to mass with me. He says, we're not some banana republic. Does he have that backwards? You mean in a banana republic they have a two-party system, Obama, or simply a dictator? This is unbelievable. Cruz may filibuster Obamacare. Did you hear that story? A California Democratic Party chair wishes death upon Ted Cruz's staffer's children. He wrote, may your children all die of debilitating, painful, and incurable diseases. Those are your compassionate, loving Democrats who love the poor and love the illegal aliens. As I predicted, a push for an amnesty bill in the House has collapsed. I told you it would after Syria. We have hope yet. 13 shot in Chicago in a mass shooting. Three-year-old boy shot in the face in Chicago in a mass shooting. Unbelievable to me. The Pope, well, he entered the world of politics. Pope says, well, the church should stop obsessing over gays and abortion. Well, then what should the Catholic religion be concerned with? Does anyone know what's left? Since you can fornicate with a mink, what is left? Well, you get the picture. Obama is willing to meet Rouhani at the UN. Rouhani is not the latest chef on the traveling chef. Rouhani is apparently the head of Iran somewhere. Pelosi, meanwhile, Pelosi has said Obama's been the most nonpartisan president in history. Meanwhile, Senator Lindsey Graham Cracker is going to seek authorization to bomb Syria. Can you believe this? Home Depot is the latest company to cut health benefits. Those are all of the news headlines today on The Savage Nation. Now let's go to listen to some great pieces from this week on The Savage Nation. There's been a report from the FBI Director James Comey who gave new details on the Navy Yard shooting, which I will disclose to you momentarily. Navy Yard murderer Aaron Alexis created a webpage with the name Mohammed Salem. That was not disclosed by the FBI Director. But law enforcement officials told NBC News that Alexis, the Navy Yard shooter, created a webpage with the name Mohammed Salem. Gee, and I thought he was a Buddhist. Unless Buddhists are now named Mohammed, I'm a little confused by this. This is the Savage Nation, 855-400-7282 is the phone number. 855-400-7282. Do you find it odd that this guy who did the shooting, even though he'd been thrown out of the military, shall I say a questionable discharge? It didn't stop the greedy contractor from hiring him. He was working in the nerve center of the U.S. Navy on computer programs that the Navy needs on their ships and God knows elsewhere around the world, even though he'd been thrown out of the Navy. I find it odd that he made an extended recent trip to Thailand. Did you know about that? Oh, yeah. I know the girls who were in the lanes didn't pick up on that yet. They were still analyzing it over in the bowling lanes, but yeah, this shooter had a recent trip to Thailand, even though he was thrown out of the Navy. And even some of his own family are saying they haven't heard from him, hadn't heard from him recently. Isn't that interesting? How did he get a job in the nerve center of the Navy? And why did he pick people working in the nerve center of the Navy at a time when the Navy is off the coast of Syria? That's very intriguing. Now, he could be just a deranged guy with medication problems. Maybe the meds didn't arrive because Obamacare hasn't clicked in yet. Maybe he really did have PTSD. But I kind of doubt that he worked alone. That's my opinion. Whether or not we will ever know the full story is quite another question, by the way. But let me go back. The strict anti-gun laws of Washington, D.C. combined with the psychopathic, strict anti-gun policies put in place by Bill Clinton in the U.S. military, certainly have played a role. Of course, the response from medicated liberals will be to make gun laws tighter. But if you actually think about it, the answer is to have more guns on bases in the armed services, boys and girls. Now, many of you who grew up on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and shows like that and Sesame Street, you're adults now. Although you look like adults, you're really still eight-year-olds. And what you don't know, all of you children in America, is that the armed services are supposed to be armed, but they were disarmed by Mr. Rogers, I mean Mr. Clinton. And that's why no one was able to shoot at this shooter. Same with the Fort Hood massacre, which was conducted by Major Nidal Hassan. So I say there should be more guns on bases. It's time to end Clinton's ban on sidearms on bases. And that's just my opinion. It's that simple. Navy Yard gunman Aaron Alexis carved the words "better off this way" into the gun he used in a shooting rampage. ABC News has learned, but here's the killer. He also carved the phrase "my ELF weapon" onto the stock of the shotgun. Now, many of you don't know what the word "elf weapon" means. Many of you think he means elf. You think it's a cute phrase. But if you really know what he's saying here, it's frightening. Do you know what an elf weapon means? Does anybody understand what ELF means? I'm sure many of you do. This is a very far left, far right thing. What is ELF? Well, ELF means extremely low frequency in some clandestine military and clandestine tech circles. Extremely low frequency. There are some speculating that the term itself refers to Alexis's rants about hearing voices and, quote, vibrations sent to his body by a microwave machine, according to law enforcement sources. So now the conspiracists are going berserk, and they're saying he was basically set up, such as Frank on KCMO. Frank, you understand where this is coming from, correct?
I know about radio. And if you remember a couple of years back, the Navy was in trouble because they were using low frequency for their submarines, and it was disturbing all the fish and everybody's going.
That's right. It disturbed the dolphins. So maybe they're using the same technology to disturb all of the marginal characters in America, and maybe they can control them to the point that they can literally drive them mad or set them over the edge or literally send messages into their head to do these things. Who knows? He carved in the stock of a shotgun, "my elf weapon" onto the stock of the shotgun, sources said. ELF weapon. If you are a member of the conspiracy class, you got something to play with here. You got something really to play with, a very big deal right here. Because he complained about microwave machines sending vibrations into his body. Now, whether he was crazy on his own to begin with, or let us say marginal, and they found a marginal member of the Navy to, let us say, turn into a sort of Manchurian candidate, is the stuff for fiction. Remember the great book, The Manchurian Candidate? I never forget reading it after seeing the movie with Frank Sinatra. It was about a brainwashed character played by Frank Sinatra who is triggered to be an assassin by his mother, no less. And the thing that triggers it is the Queen of Hearts when Mom flips the card. Richard Condon. How is it that Obama waived the ban on arming terrorists to allow machine guns to go to Syrian opposition forces, but has not waived the disarming of American troops on military? If I were president and this happened after the Fort Hood massacre, the next day I would have gone on national television and I would have said this is going to come to an end in order to reduce the incidence of such crimes against our military personnel. I am now going to make certain that armed forces personnel are required to carry their arms on bases at all times in order to defend themselves and their brothers in arms. What would be wrong with that? It's unbelievable to me. And yet we have the most corrupt senator in American history demanding more political hay for gun grabbing, without talking about post offices and shopping carts. 855-407-282. And by the way, all these civilians who came running out with their hands up, screaming in the streets, did you notice they were not naval personnel per se? They were contractors working as part of the military-industrial complex. I'm not saying they weren't doing useful tasks. How many contractors can there be on our military bases? Why are these jobs not given to military personnel? Why are they farmed out to contractors? Well, we know the answer. We know the answer because you can hire contractors by the hour with no benefits. And all the money gets sucked up to the hedge funds that own the contractors. That's how it works. The hedge fund operators, who are the greediest pigs on the planet, suck the money up to the top and starve everybody else. After all, if you need a 300-foot yacht, you can't get it by paying anyone a wage with a benefit. So you make certain that that it works this way. There's a lot to be said. You heard the news. There's a lot to 13 dead in Navy Yard shooting is the headline. We know he was arrested for shooting bullets into his neighbor. You know the whole story. You heard about it, right? Am I giving you anything new that you haven't heard already? I'll give it to you anyway. Many of you work for a living. You don't have time to listen to talk radio all day. The shooter, Aaron Alexis, who opened fire at the Washington Navy Yard, killing 13 people. He served in the U.S. Navy for 4 years before he was thrown out in 2011 for misconduct. Now, that didn't stop the contractor from hiring him and giving him a top secret clearance. No, because after all, where else are you going to get someone to work by the hour who knows what he's doing? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Obama gave a speech Monday talking at the White House while the drama unfolded at the supposedly secure Navy Yard nearby. He could have posted his original remarks on the White House website or comfort the shaken city. But jarringly, the president went ahead with his political attack, briefly addressing the slaughter before moving on to jab Republicans over the corporate tax rate and resistance to Obamacare. The man who connected so electrically and facilely in 2008, causing Americans to overlook his thin resume, cannot seem to connect anymore. With a shrinking circle of trust inside the White House, Obama is having trouble establishing trust outside with once reliable factions, grassroots Democrats and liberals in Congress. She means herself as well. She means the diehard, goose-stepping liberals who put him in power. But the point is Obama is losing the room is really the theme for the day. But it goes even larger than that. Even the far left has turned on Obama, Dianne Feinstein, and the other fraudulent liberals. Even the far left now see through their corruption and incompetence. Now, what evidence do I have for that statement? That's quite a statement, isn't it? Let me make the statement again. Even the far left has turned on Obama, Feinstein, and other liberals because they see through their corruption. It's taken them all these years to see what I've been telling you about, and here I am not a member of the far left. I'll give you an example. The biggest example that I have for you is this story that came up. The title is The Husband of Senator Dianne Feinstein, Richard Blum, chairs a company that brokers sales of U.S. Postal Service's facilities. This has been a major topic on Pacifica Radio, which is as far left out of the mainstream as you can get in the Bay Area or America. They are going bonkers over the fact that Feinstein and her husband are capitalizing on the sale of post offices without any competitive bidding. The left is now on to Feinstein. The media is now on to Obama. The only people who are not saying anything are those who are ignoramuses in the middle. The ignoramuses. So let me read you the article. The husband of Senator Dianne Feinstein chairs a company that brokers sales of U.S. Postal Service's facilities. Again, this is from a far-left website. I will summarize. It was recently learned that the United States has entered into a contract with one firm to sell 56 buildings that currently house U.S. post offices. The government has decided that it no longer needs these buildings, many of which are located on prime land in towns and cities across the nation. The sale of these properties will bring in billions of dollars, and with that, millions of dollars in commissions for the one company that is in charge of handling the sale and negotiation of the new leases. What makes this such a matter of concern, they write, is that the company that the government has contracted with to conduct the sales and the corresponding leases for the new locations of the displaced post offices is owned by Richard Blum. Does that name mean anything to anyone? Maybe it should be rephrased and say that the person who owns the company that is solely in charge of this multi-million-dollar transaction is Richard Blum, the husband of Senator Dianne Feinstein. Origins. Facing a deficit of billions of dollars, the United States Postal Service has floated a number of proposals to reduce the deficit, including selling off hundreds of post offices in order to gain cash flow and reduce expenses. According to the Postal Service's 2012 report to Congress, more than 600 buildings nationwide have been earmarked for disposal. In 2011, the C.B. Richard Ellis Group, now CBRE Group, Inc., the world's largest commercial real estate services firm, was awarded an exclusive contract to market postal facilities, which CBRE touted by announcing, quote, "Historically, USPS has worked with multiple real estate service providers. The new contract enables USPS to consolidate these activities with one service provider." Let me add an editorial. That's called monopoly. This award has been the subject of some controversy, as CBRE's chairman of the board is Richard C. Blum, the husband of Senator Dianne Feinstein, who represents the state of California in the U.S. Senate. No, she doesn't. She represents Richard Blum and Dianne Feinstein in the U.S. Senate. Let me correct that. Although it is true that Blum is both CBRE's chairman and the spouse of a U.S. senator, it is not accurate to say that he is, quote, solely in charge of CBRE, nor that he owns the company. CBRE is headed by President and CEO Robert E. Sulentic, and CBRE is a public company whose shares are owned by many different individuals and institutional stockholders. It is true, however, that Blum Capital, a private equity firm founded by Richard Blum, is one of CBRE's largest institutional stockholders. Writing in the San Francisco Chronicle, columnist Andrew S. Ross quoted a representative of Senator Dianne Feinstein as asserting that she is not involved in her husband's business dealings and the contract between the USPS and CBRE was not initiated or influenced by Congress. As for accusations of a conflict of interest and suspicions that Feinstein may have influenced the awarding of the contract to her husband's firm, Dianne Feinstein's office strongly denies the charges. Here's what our Feinstein's office said. It's from Snopes.com. Snopes.com. Here's what Feinstein's office said. Senator Feinstein is not involved with and does not discuss any of her husband's business decisions with him. Her husband's holdings are his separate personal property. Senator Feinstein's assets are held in a blind trust. That arrangement has been in place since before she came to the Senate in 1992, said Brian Weiss, Feinstein's spokesmouth. In 2012, Feinstein voted for an amendment to a postal reform bill that would have temporarily halted post office closings. The amendment was defeated in the House. Well, you get the picture.
Savage. This is an encore presentation of the Savage Nation.
We have the single and sole person responsible for the loss of life.
Comfortable. Again, comfortable. The horsewomen of the apocalypse known as Washington, D.C. gave a press conference. They got everything under control. Don't you worry about it. They're in charge. They got everything under control. Now, here's a guy that the news is reporting is he's a decorated naval personnel. What do you mean decorated? If you look at the medals he has, they give them to anyone who's been in the Army for 30 days or more without shooting anybody inside the military. Can you believe this? But Reuters is already reporting decorated naval, decorated sailor. That's what they're saying. Decorated sailor. What do you mean decorated? What do you mean decorated? It's like you get it out of a Cracker Jack box. And he had secret clearance, even though the man didn't work at the naval yard yet. They immediately, even though he's tossed out of the Navy for shooting off a gun in his house, God knows what else he did, they gave him secret clearance to start working at the naval yard. Reuters reported. Alexis was to begin working there as a civilian contractor with a military-issued ID card. Alexis is reported to have used guns in moments of anger, but was also known as a quiet man who meditated regularly at a Buddhist temple in Texas. How'd that Buddhist meditation work out for him? Not too well, I would think. The suspected shooter was an employee of a company called the Experts. Yeah, we went through that Hewlett-Packard. In other words, they can get him by the hour that way. You don't have to pay any bennies. But here's a guy hired, thrown out of the military. He's hired to go into the Naval Operations Center, like the brain cells, to refresh equipment used on the Navy Marine Corps intranet network. Ah, wow. This is terrible. This is terrible. He was killed in a gunfight with police. In the Navy from 07 to 2011, but thrown out because of misconduct during his service. Of course, they're not releasing that he was dishonorably discharged yet. He may not have been because they don't do that anymore. 3 years before he enlisted, Alexis was arrested in Seattle for shooting out the tires of a car as a result of an anger-fueled blackout. because some construction worker had disrespected him, and they took him in the Navy anyway. That's the new Navy. It's not your father's Navy. It's not your father's Navy. I'm surprised he didn't take him in the FBI or the Secret Service. He told police he could not remember firing his gun until about an hour after the incident because he had a blackout. See, that's a new excuse. He probably went to some shyster lawyer, told him to say he had a blackout. Yeah, okay. From the outside, he was a quiet person, said Jay Sirun, an assistant to the monks at the Buddhist temple Alexis attended near Fort Worth, Texas. But on the inside, they say he was very aggressive. He did not like to be close with anybody. Okay, well, you get the picture. You get the picture. He was either a nut who was about, like, let's say, a ticking time bomb, never should have been hired by the defense contractor, number one. Number two, for shooting out the tires of a neighbor's car in a driveway, should have been denied the right to carry a to have a weapon. Don't think I believe everyone on earth should carry a gun. Don't put me in that category of being a nut. The guy who did the shooting in Connecticut, Adam Lanza, should never have had a gun. He was on medication. He was a certifiable nut. His mother was a nut. She shouldn't have had a gun. There should have been no guns in the house with Lanza. None whatsoever. So don't tell me I'm in the category of saying everyone should have a gun. I didn't say that. This bum shouldn't have had a gun. Shouldn't have been allowed to have a gun. Why? Because he already had an incident of shooting out tires because he didn't like the way someone disrespected him. That should disqualify him from ever having the right to carry a gun. Get a gun. Let him carry. Shouldn't be allowed to have a gun. Period. I'm not into everybody on earth needs a gun, including a baby with a bottle in its mouth. I'm not one of those. No, sir. But he shot a bullet through the roof of his apartment, too. An upstairs neighbor who told police she was terrified of Alexis after a long-standing dispute over noise called for help after a bullet flew up through her floor one evening. I guess that's workplace violence. In other words, he shoots a gun through the floor, didn't kill her. But again, that didn't disqualify him from working for the U.S. Navy as a contractor. Alexis told police the gun went off accidentally while he was cleaning it. And he didn't think it went all the way through the ceiling. Because he couldn't see any light through the hole. Oh, okay, well, that's an out. He was booked on suspicion of recklessly discharging a firearm, but never formally charged. You know why he was never formally charged? Because the neighbor was afraid for her life. What would you do if you had a moron with a gun below you, shot through the floor? Would you go forward with a... Yeah, you get the picture. This is unbelievable to me. This is really sickening. Meanwhile, Obama is arming with machine guns and other weapons, the Al-Qaeda members of the Syrian opposition, and our troops are disarmed on our military bases. You hear this? I'm surprised that Obama doesn't give secret clearances to the members of the Syrian opposition to come over and visit our military-industrial complexes to see how we good Americans work. I wonder if any Russian politicians listen to the show on the Internet for fun to polish their language. You know, I have a Slavic sense of humor, which keeps me going my whole life. If I didn't have a Slavic sense of humor, I wouldn't have been able to get through the first grade. The world is so crazy. It's run by such schmucks. Never has the schmuck quotient, the SQ, been so high in American history. The SQ is at the highest level in American history. More schmucks are running more things than ever before, and bad things are happening at a higher rate than ever before. That's because the SQ is so high. All right, I want the lanes cleared because the girls and I are coming in. We want to sweep in the bowling lanes tonight. We had a rough day. We're a little hot under the collar from all of the tragedy over at the base. We need the lanes cleared out because we need to do an APB on the lanes here. We're coming in for a little R&R after a rough day. We want to do a little debriefing of the police chief and the other girls in charge here. We got to figure this out before tomorrow's news conference. We got a new uniform pressed. Nice pressed uniform with medals on it. We're going to have on there tomorrow. And we got to make sure we get a little downtime in the lanes tonight. Well, if I couldn't let go of a little humor tonight, what could I do? You want me to take this right to the end and have a heart attack? I'm not going to do it. It's the Savage Nation, the last word in talk radio. You know, the other day I was in San Francisco. I forgot to tell you. I couldn't believe what was going on. It was outside the Hyatt Hotel. It was a big crowd, a big hubbub. And the traffic was blocked off for 4 hours. So naturally, I walked over to it over by the Hyatt, and I said to some passerbys, onlookers, what's going on? They said, well, there's a naked guy up on a street sign. I said, a naked guy? And I swear, I'm not making this up. I couldn't make this up.
the SFPD had a bomb truck, a bomb-proof truck was underneath the naked homeless man, along with about 50 armed officers trying to talk to the bum down from the street sign. I couldn't believe what I was looking at. One person said, just shoot him. I didn't say that. Someone said, shoot him. No, they had to talk to Mr. Smith up on the street sign. They had to cajole Mr. Smith. They tied up the whole downtown in San Francisco for one bum. Now, I don't blame the SFPD for bringing out the bomb truck. After all, a naked man could, well, I don't know what he could do, but you need a bomb truck. And you certainly need a tax squad to bring a naked man down off a street sign. You certainly do. I mean, you need armed men with 40 caliber handguns and machine guns and a bomb truck to bring a guy down off a street sign. But I don't actually blame the tax squad. I blame the lawyers. Because you know what this homeless bum said when they finally had enough? And one of the policemen scrambled up the street sign and grabbed him and pulled him down, wrapped up like a mummy. They put a spit thing on him and wrapped him up like a mummy to keep him from flailing. He said, I'm going to sue. Till they muffled him. I don't blame the police. They're working in impossible situations here in San Francisco and every city in the country. The lawyers have destroyed the country. The tort law in this country is so sick that the police are afraid to do their jobs. And that leads us right back to this situation here at the campus, God forbid you should call it a Navy base, around the PC, ladies who run it, Navy base. All right, these are contractors, military-industrial complex at work. How many were there, 30,000 people? What were they doing there? It's unbelievable to me. Why aren't naval personnel doing these jobs? Why? Because Obama thinned out the military and turned it over to the contractors and put them in power. Think about all of the, just think about the patronage jobs as a result of firing or not hiring and firing military personnel, right? You fire, let's say, 100,000 people in the military, and then you give your friends who put you in office, like Hewlett-Packard, the contract to run the very systems that the Navy, Army, Marine Corps were running themselves, and then they get to give patronage jobs, and then all of them vote for Obama. You get how it works? If you watch the show Boardwalk Empire about the corrupt head, Nucky Thompson, of Atlantic City, you get some inkling of what's going on in the United States today under Barack Obama. It's almost identical to Boardwalk Empire. But I wouldn't call it Boardwalk Empire. I'd call it something else, but it's a family show. I'll be right back. 7-5-400-7282. Let's now begin with John McCain, because most of us know he is a twisted sister. Something's wrong with him. Something doesn't add up. A 40-watt bulb that's burning on 20 watts. Something's wrong with McCain. I don't care that he's somewhat of a middle-of-the-road Republican. There's plenty of those. But this is a man who has gone on to the enemy camp and is now becoming a spokesmouth for the enemy camp. So he wrote a letter to Pravda, as I said to you, and in the letter, he tried to criticize Putin. Now, as you well know, John McCain didn't write the letter. None of them do. He had a flack write it for him. And we deconstructed the letter for you on the Savage Nation to show you the absurdity, actually, of John McCain doing a thing like this. Now, I want you to understand something. I'm a talk show host. I've written many books. And the reason I am loved by millions is because of my easygoing style and my keen sense of the absurd. That's what's made me popular. It's because of my easygoing style and keen sense of the absurd that I am perhaps amongst the most popular talk show hosts in the world. That's the truth. So take what I'm about to say to you and see whether I'm serious or not. You can take it any way you want. So McCain's letter is about to be read and deconstructed right here on the Savage Nation. Here's what he wrote. And he wrote this to Putin in Pravda. McCain wrote, "I believe you should live according to the dictates of your conscience, Mr. Putin, not your government. I believe you deserve the opportunity to improve your lives in an economy that is built to last and benefits the many, not just the powerful few." Shall I comment on that? Shall I comment on that? Do I need to comment on that? Do you think in America the economy benefits the many and not just the powerful few? He then wrote, "You should be governed by a rule of law that is clear, consistently and impartially enforced, and just." Is that why John McCain supports not enforcing the immigration laws of the United States of America? He then wrote, President Putin and his associates do not believe in these values. They don't respect your dignity or accept your authority over them. He's writing to the Russian people. Is that why McCain supports a Syria strike, even though the majority of the American people do not? McCain then wrote, Putin punishes dissent and imprisons opponents. Is that why he and Obama and the majority in Congress in the IRS targeted Tea Party groups? Is that why McCain says nothing about NSA spying? Next, McCain wrote in Pravda that Putin and his friends rigged the elections. Really, Mr. McCain? And what about gerrymandering districts such as those in which Alan West resided in order to throw him out of office because he was a great American? What about the Black Panthers and Acorn, Mr. McCain? Would you say they've been rigging our elections? He then wrote that Putin and his friends control your media. Oh, that's a ripe one, isn't it? That's really a ripe one, Mr. McCain. You grant interviews only to those who will kiss your feet, and you only answer specific questions, and you only grant interviews to specific reporters. How different is that than Russia's Putin, or Putin's Russia, rather? He then said they harass, threaten, and banish organizations that defend your right to self-governance. Really, Mr. McCain? How about the Tea Party attacks by your government and the NSA spying, Mr. McCain? You then wrote that to perpetuate their power, Putin and his friends forced a rampant corruption in your courts and your economy and terrorized journalists who try to expose their corruption. Really, Mr. McCain, when have you or any other Republican ever spoken out on Michael Savage having been banned from entering Britain? Never, I would say, even though you're a great naval hero. Number nine, you say that they throw the members of a punk rock band in jail for the crime of being provocative and vulgar, and for having the audacity to protest President Putin's rule. Really, Mr. McCain, how about the man who was thrown in jail here, the anti-Islam filmmaker Nakula Basile Nakula, who did a video called Innocence of Muslims about what went on in Benghazi? Wasn't he thrown in jail, Mr. McCain? You then say they write laws to codify bigotry against people whose sexual orientation they condemn. Is that right, Mr. McCain? Well, in the case of your administration, you are punishing the religions and churches in this country that do not follow your liberal doctrines. You see, I'm saying Mr. McCain because he's part of the problem. You get it? I will continue this on the Savage Nation, the John McCain Pravda list. So many of the statements that McCain wrote are so easily deconstructed and applied to our government here that I must continue. But before I do, I want to go back to McCain's alleged heroism during his years as a naval aviator. So let me tell you about the USS Forrestal fire, which has been swept under the rug. Many of you don't know that McCain, why I say he did it, the ship almost sank, 134 sailors were killed, and 161 were injured on the aircraft carrier USS Forrestal in 1967 after a Zuni rocket was discharged on the flight deck. Now, the official fact check issue on this says that it happened by accident. However, surviving crewmen and those who investigated the Forrestal fire reported that John McCain deliberately wet-started his A4E Skyhawk to shake up the guy in the F4 Phantom behind his A4. Wet starts are done either deliberately, where the starter motor switch allows kerosene to pull in the engine and give a wet start, or it could have happened accidentally, but what happens is it shoots a large flame from the tail of the aircraft. This is while his plane was sitting on the deck of the aircraft carrier. It is believed by many crewmen and investigators that John McCain deliberately wet-started his A4E to shake up the guy in the plane behind his A4. Wet starts, you see, shoot a large flame from the tail of the aircraft. In McCain's case, this wet start apparently cooked off and launched the Zuni rocket from the rear F4 that touched off the explosions. In July 29th of 1967, McCain's accident killed 134 sailors and injured 161. Now, you may say anyone can make a mistake. That is true. However, such a mistake, so far as I know, never happened before or after on a U.S. aircraft carrier. Is there a pattern of this kind of behavior in McCain's background? Yes, there is. During the course of his flying career with the U.S. Navy, John McCain was involved in at least five major mishaps or crashes involving his aircraft. You hear about this? Did you know that he was involved in a crash in the Corpus Christi, Texas on March 12, 1960 while training? And the AD-6 Sky Raider trainer that he was flying crashed because McCain failed to maintain an airspeed above the stall speed. It attributed the accident to the preoccupation of the pilot, coupled with a power setting too low to maintain level flight. The single-engine prop plane crashed and sank to the bottom of Corpus Christi Bay. McCain was rescued by a helicopter after swimming to the surface. The accident report excluded a series of other possible factors, including engine failure and disorientation of the pilot due to vertigo. It recorded pilot error as the sole contributing factor to the accident. I don't think you know much about that. In 1965, McCain had another accident with a T-2 trainer jet while flying between New York City and Norfolk, Virginia. The Naval Aviation Safety Center was unable to determine the cause of that accident or the degree of pilot error. Lastly, McCain wrote later that his engine flamed out and he had to eject. In his autobiography, McCain recalls another mishap around December 1961. Quote, "When I knocked down some power lines while flying too low over southern Spain, my daredevil clowning had cut off electricity to a great many Spanish homes and created a small international incident." The reason McCain was not thrown out of the Naval Aviation Corps is because his father was a distinguished admiral and his grandfather was a more distinguished commander in the U.S. Navy. John McCain otherwise would have been cashiered out of the Navy, and he would not be a U.S. Senator today taking the side of the enemy. That's one man's opinion. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
You know, an unintended coincidence was on my mind. My novel, A Time for War, is in paperback, right? And it's all about, you know, Jack Hatfield is the main character. But I introduced a new character, Dover Griffith, an idealistic young woman staffer at the Office of Naval Intelligence. Can you believe this? And in A Time for War, the Office of Naval Intelligence played sort of a big background story here. And so my hero, Hatfield, pursues a trail leading to a billionaire American electronics entrepreneur who has sold out his country with the help of officials at the highest level of the American government. And as enemy operatives plan a two-pronged attack that will disarm the American military, oh really, Michael, and release a deadly toxin killing hundreds of thousands of civilians, Hatfield and Dover race to locate this new ground zero and save an unsuspecting country. That's my book. That's my book, A Time for War, but you didn't want to buy it. I tried to tell you I saw things in my own way. It's so well done. I got a call today from Las Vegas from a friend of mine. He said he's at the pool, and he sees someone reading my book, A Time for War, in paperback, and the guy doesn't even know I'm on the radio. He just likes the novel. Would you believe this? It's like two identities. People are writing that Michael Savage is the Mark Twain of our time. Do you know that? I know you won't hear it on a Wallbanger or a Leprechaun. I certainly won't be on the, what's her name? Blondie on Fox News? The cheerleader they're bringing back after the baby. What's her name? Oh, the Kelly file. Where'd they come up with these hokey names? The Kelly file. The Kelly file sounds weird. I think that's a bad name. Let me tell you something about names. It's very funny. I'm an expert on naming things. I'm one of the best in nomenclature in the world because I studied botanical Latin. So years ago, like 30 years ago, I remember learning this. I'll never forget this as long as I live. It was a famous story. Chevrolet had a good little car called the Nova. It was actually a piece of junk. My sister owned one and it caught fire. It blew up. It was a four-cylinder engine. But it was a cute car. It was a Nova, I think, when the engine caught fire. Whatever. So they tried to sell the Chevy Nova in South America, and nobody bought it. So why didn't it buy? They figured out years later, the corporate executives, that you can't sell the word Nova because it means no-go. So none of the South Americans would buy the Chevy Nova because it meant no-go, right? So it's the same thing like the Kelly file is a mistake. Because when I hear the Kelly file, I think of a woman filing her nails. They could stick with her now. I got a new name for her. Wait, give me a bell. Bingo, I got it. I give a name to everyone, so I got it. The Filer. I got it. Megyn Kelly is forever now referred to on this show as the Filer. The Filer. We got the Leprechaun. We got Scarface. We got the Filer. And we got Wallbanger. What more could you ask for? So you got your money's worth already for the night. Mike on W. I'm enjoying myself for what I've been through in my life. Not bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not tempting God. I know it already. Most guys my age, what they have. Either they're pushing daisies, number one, or they can't breathe anymore. Their legs are shot. Their knees are shot. Their arms are shot. Their hips are gone. And I'm talking about guys who are captains of the football team in high school. Those guys are either dead or they're crippled. It's terrible. The little guys, the wimps, the guys who nobody liked, didn't want them to play on the team. We go on forever. Let me tell you that. It's like my dog Teddy. He's 10 years old. People look at him. They think he's a puppy. How did that happen? So I was speaking to a guy, Howie Carr in Boston. I was on his show last week, a local show. So I talked to his producer afterwards. We talked about my dog after. So I said, Teddy, I love Teddy. He's 10. She said, oh, I had a dog named Millie. She lived to 20, toy poodle. I was so happy. I was empowered because I hope I could live 10 more years. I kind of doubt it, but let's say I can. Say Teddy and I go at the same time to the next world. But the thing is, the thought of living without this dog is freaking me out. I don't want it. I can't take it anymore. I can't lose one more dog and see the ashes in a little box on my mantle with his little picture, the Snowy and the one before that, the little pictures. But there's someone I know who's very bright who said, look, Michael, here's the way you look at dogs who die before we do. She said God set it up that way because if we died before them, they would be abandoned and be running on the roadside. So God set it up that they live fast lives. That's why they go crazy. Like if you leave them in the house like for 5 minutes, you come back, it's 5 days to them. I have to trick this dog. I have to give him a greenie. He's eating the greenie. The next thing he knows, he hears the garage door closed and he goes insane. Oh, God, no, his worst nightmare, he was tricked. I go on my little bicycle ride to get some cardio, right, for 5 minutes before going back into a darkened room to avoid a migraine from clamping on my head. And it's like he's a combination of sulking, he's hurt, he rolls over. It's like, why'd you ditch me? Why'd you do it? Why'd you leave me for 5 days? It was all of 7 minutes. It's unbelievable to me, but then I realized why. If they only live, let's say, an average of 10, 12 years of dog, and dog time, right, and dog time, to them it is like 5 years, I guess. Or something like that. But I hope he goes on to 20. That would be nice. You know, we got old guys together hanging out. Said, how's it feel? How are your legs today? Not bad. No, not bad. Not doing good. It's okay. I'll get by. You know, just hang out, go to Miami, get the hats. He doesn't show any sign of arthritis. And I feed him a human diet. I give him kibble. I give him chicken breast. Yes, a whole chicken breast. I know people are going to hate me. I buy a cooked chicken. The breast is his. Skin comes off, cut the breast in the thing, fresh organic carrots, boom. And then he goes crazy for a greenie. Once in a while, he gets cheese. Once in a while, I go to a Basque restaurant, he gets a sirloin burger. He gets a Roger burger from a Chalet Basque. What a lucky dog. Well, there's a trick to why I order the hamburger for the dog. As you know, I have no patience whatsoever. I am the most impatient man ever put on the planet. I have no patience. And yet, as a child, I built models. Figure that one out. It's a weird paradox. I'm sure they declare it a disease of some kind, put me on medication today. I have no patience, yet I could sit for hours and build models as a child. Do kids build models anymore? No, that's an illness. Could you imagine a child building a stick model of an airplane and putting, like, paper on it today? They would call up a psychiatrist and say he's very sick, he's socially inept. A boy his age should be on medication and playing video games or dressing in his sister's clothing. This child, there's something wrong with him. He's actually putting on pants and boys' shoes. We have to look into this immediately. WABC Greg, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
How much longer are you going to be feeding Teddy chicken breasts now that we're going to be sending our chickens to China to be processed and sent back?
Yeah, maybe he'll learn to speak Mandarin as a result.
Ah, at the very least. I mean, what kind?
Yeah, if he gets chicken back from China, then he can buy them speaking Mandarin. Who knows?
Going to buy them from the dead chicken man over in China.
At least you're able to laugh at it. The chicken I feed Teddy with his kibble, Greg, I buy it in a local market. It's called a Mary's Chicken. What do I know where it's processed? Mary. They come up with like local name. What do I know? They say it's local. It's like a hippie chicken, apparently. It's happy to be killed. It puts its neck in a guillotine to die. I don't know. What do I know? I love all of these. All of the hippies, right? Oh, I'm eating farm-raised beef. Well, what do you want, a reward? It's still a cow. It didn't want to die, you idiot. Yeah, I eat organic. Every schmuck I meet is,
I'm gluten-free.
Well, what the hell does it matter to me, idiot? What do I care if you're gluten-free? What, are you special? Everyone's gluten-free. Like it's like kosher to them. They think they're like rabbis and rabbinettes.
Yeah, I'm gluten-free. I'm sorry I can't come to your house. I'm so much better than you. Wow, okay. Really, gluten-free? No kidding. How'd you get that? Well, I'm very special, yes. Listen to me. Let me tell you something about gluten-free. Are you ready for this? First of all, from the get-go, there are people who have celiac disease who need to avoid gluten. The rest of you are being conned by a fad. Now you'll say, wait a minute, I feel better since I went gluten-free. Good for you. It's called placebo effect. It's well known in medicine. It's a placebo effect. Moreover, when you're watching your diet for anything, you tend to eat better. So don't assign it automatically to the gliadin in the wheat fraction. So then you say to the uneducated moron, tell me how the human race survived for 5,000 years or more on wheat. How did they suddenly develop gluten allergies? Oh, well, it's not the same wheat that your ancestors ate. See, they have the built-in answer already. I've been around this all my life, the people who have capitalized on fears to sell things to those who are, let us say, a little weak of mind. So that's it. Don't get me stuck. Gluten-free. Everyone's gluten-free. WABC Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, you have to save us from 3 to 6 on WABC here in New York. I can't take the wall banger anymore. It's like listening to MSNBC. When are we going to get you?
Well, I don't know. I made a prediction a few weeks ago that I predicted could happen. Do I know what the powers that be may do? I don't know. But the thing is, when you listen to the wall banger on ABC New York and Drive Time, you're saying he just repeats the talking points of the GOP?
But I don't listen to him anymore. I can't take it. I hang out at a cigar bar after work every night with two Russian refuseniks that came over 25 years ago. They say to me, Mike, why is this country going in the direction of the country that we escaped from? Now we're here.
Oh, that's music to Savage's ears.
Of course it
now,
is.
Now, do these Ruskies listen to me at night, 9 o'clock, or it's too late for them?
Yes, no, well, no, I tell them to listen to you, but
9 o'clock already, they're asleep. They talk tough by day, and they go to sleep at 8:30. I'm just joking. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I tell you the truth, this is a pastiche, a cornucopia of insanity like I've never seen. I don't know where to begin. With the Washington Navy Yard that doesn't build ships anymore? Or sending guns to the terrorists in Syria and taking them away from Americans? By the way, I figured out where the billion bullets that are purchased by DHS and other agencies of Obama's government have gone. They're going to Syria. They're the ones who bought the bullets for the Syrian Free Army. And then after they get through with the evil man in Syria, Assad, they can bring him over here as Obama's private army. At least it could happen. I mean, why not? Under this administration, why not? By the way, you're listening to the Savage Nation. This is not coming through the wall and through loose lip-sync ships. You're actually not imagining this show. You're hearing it. It's a national radio show called the Savage Nation. My God, we've gone from building ships to loose lips in one generation. You know, the tragic shooting that left 13 people dead, including the gunman, Aaron Alexis, who's really a victim. I mean, you listen to MSNBC, he's a victim. He slipped through the cracks. The system failed him. Now, it's true he was a nut who shot his gun off at people who parked in his driveway. Another time he shot it through the ceiling of his apartment and almost killed a woman above him. But that didn't stop the Navy from giving him glowing reports. No, they moved him up. Yeah, they moved him up. One report after another, he was better than the day before. Glowing, wonderful genius. That's because he didn't look like Timothy McVeigh. So they figured one day he could be Navy Secretary because he hadn't killed anyone yet. Now, well, unfortunately, he can't be promoted anymore. The Navy Yard. When I was a child, I would ride over the Williamsburg Bridge with my dad. Yes, another dad story. To the little store on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, the little antique store on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, where I'd clean bronzes like a Dickensian character, I did. And we go over the Williamsburg Bridge into Manhattan. I'd look down at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, where they actually built ships. And I saw huge aircraft carriers with the markings of the U.S. Navy. Major battleships, cruisers, destroyers. It was so exciting. I think now it's a disco where they sell ecstasy at night. That's the new Brooklyn Navy Yard. Now, what is the Washington Navy Yard? You thought everyone was walking around in, like, uniforms. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. No. No, it's not a Navy Yard anymore. They don't build ships there anymore. They used to, there was an ordnance plant. They used to build munitions there. But with the Libs coming to town under, well, starting with Clinton, it's now a headquarter for the following organizations. The Navy Yard is now not building ships nor making, let's say, big cannon weapons or whatever. It's the Naval Sea Systems Command, whatever that means. I have no idea what that is. The Naval Historical Center. You know what that is. They get the liberals in there to rewrite the history of the U.S. Navy. The U.S. Navy Judge Advocate General Corps. Those are a bunch of failure lawyers who can't get a job in the private sector. Marine Corps Institute. I don't know what that is. And the United States Navy Band. Leave me alone with this. It's sad, isn't it? In the beginning, it once had 25,000 workers building ships. Today, there are 3,000 service members and civilians who work at the Navy Yard. Well, it's sad, you know. Here you had a contractor, Alexis, how he got a top security clearance, even though he was a certifiable nut, who heard things through the walls and played violent video games and was on medication. Well, wait a minute. I'm not thinking clearly. Hold it. That shouldn't have stopped him from moving up into the Navy when I think about it. When you think about that, I mean, you would think that in a normal situation, he should have been vetted and stopped. But wait a minute, he had delusions, didn't he? Did that ever stop any others in the government? After all, we have Nancy Pelosi who talked to her granddaughter about whether to go to war in Syria. Did that stop her? Then they put her away the next day? No. We have Obama who still thinks he's the leader of the free world. Did that stop him? They put him away the next day? No. You look at John Boehner. He actually thinks he's still the Speaker of the House. Have they put him away with the gavel? No. Go down the list. So the fact of the matter is, just because this guy was talking to himself and shooting his gun through the ceiling, when you think about it, that shouldn't have stopped anything. We could talk about that, and I don't think I want to. Not right now. It's not your father's Navy. I mean, God bless the poor people who were injured or killed, but most of them were not Navy personnel. They were civilian contractors, part of the military-industrial complex worker bees. Have you noticed how many people work in the military now? Simply getting contract after contract. The fact of the matter is, I said it yesterday, it was picked up today, that there must be more guns on bases to prevent this from happening. I said this after the Fort Hood massacre by Muslim Major Nidal Hassan, where nobody had a gun. Nidal Hassan had to be stopped by a local policeman. This shooter wasn't stopped, by the way, until, I don't even know who shot him, a local policeman shot him, because the unarmed military personnel on U.S. bases is a national scandal and a tragedy. The weather's weird, like even out here, I've already got, I'm putting away the summer clothes, I'm getting out the winter clothes, then it's summer again here in the Bay Area. I had to pull out the short-sleeve shirt from Hawaii today. I was ready into the long sleeve, I smelled autumn in the air. 2 hours later, I'm back into the Aloha shirt that I wanted to burn already for the season. Thank God it's dark by the time the show is over the air. Oh, I can't wait. I love the late show. I mean, I started there when I was, another time slot. I was earlier. I run into people now in the Bay Area. Oh, are you still on the radio? You used to be on the radio? I feel like saying, I feel like taking an ice cream cone and putting them in their eye. That's only to make me, unhappy. That's why I don't talk to normal people. You can't talk to anyone who's not your peer in the world. Let me give you a key to that. I don't care what you do, what business you're in. Never talk to anyone below your level in anything. They will always look to put you down no matter how. They can't help it. Even by accident, they do it. I'm not into any of this. There's nothing to bash in the movies. There's nothing to bash on television. Obama has disappeared like a shadowy figure. Disappeared after Syria. He's like sulking. I don't even know if he's still in Washington. Where is the man? The greatest embarrassment in the history of American foreign relations occurred last week, and the president is nowhere to be seen. So then there's a mass shooting. So the lunatics come out and say, ready, he was a Manchurian candidate. You know?
Savage.
Conservative like I am. He was more of a liberal type. He wasn't happy with the former administration.
That's the shooter. He was that's more happy Barry with here. This All right, we got it already. If he looked like Timothy McVeigh, he'd be on Good Morning America. They'd be visiting his grandmother now somewhere. What a country. Now they're putting up AR-15 like he used an assault weapon. This piece of garbage who killed those people bought a Remington 870 shotgun and 15 shotgun shells, which he used to kill 12 innocent people. He blasted them with a shotgun. And the story about the AR-15 was never used by anyone but law enforcement at the shooting on Monday. So I would like to suggest since we've been hearing about people shot with AR-15s, with the round is a .223, by the way. If anybody was shot with a .223, that's friendly fire. That means some of the police killed some of the people. If that is the case, that's been kind of a hushed up deal. You know, they said he had an AR-15, handgun, shotgun. No, he had only a shotgun, and he didn't kill anyone with a handgun, and he didn't kill any more than AR-15. If anyone was, God forbid, shot with an AR-15, my friends, that's a little friendly fire here. That's why I've been talking about gluten-free pizza. I'd rather talk about my dog's diet and gluten-free pizza than this animal who shot them yesterday. The sympathy in the media is overwhelming. Oh, poor man, he fell through the cracks. Oh, the system failed him. Oh, if only we had reached out. Oh, if only this. Oh, if only that. Ban violent video games and keep the nuts out of the military. And stop promoting idiots who don't even belong in the military. Stop pushing the white males out of every position and putting morons in their place. It happened to the universities, and look where we are with them. They took men like me who would have been a great professor, and look where I am today. I'm here, what, because I'm stupid? Take a look at what's gone on in the universities, because white men like me were told you not need apply. So look where I am. Look how I've risen to the top of my field in broadcasting. I'm a best-selling author, and I wouldn't have been a good professor. Instead, some moron's a better professor than me. No, that's why the universities have turned into the cesspools they are. And now apply the same logic to the military. How long do you think we can have a country left with this thinking, if you want to call it thinking? Take a look at what's going on in the Navy. Yes, sir. I mean, yes, ma'am, you're fired. Yes, ma'am, you're fired. You should have said yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I mean, yes, sir, you're fired too. That's what's going on in the Navy. Yes, ma'am. They can't fire a gun. They can't steer a ship. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. They can't drive a ship. They can't shoot a gun, but they make the women. Yes, ma'am. I mean, yes, sir, you're fired. Then they bring in all their girlfriends. I'm going, Lieutenant Commander Joan. Yeah, yes. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir, you're fired too. What do you mean? What a Navy. It's like a nut house. The new Navy. They can't fly airplanes. They can't fire guns. And they can't steer ships. They turn them into vice admirals. Admirals. And they run everything. That's the world I live in. No wonder they canceled the venture in Syria. They don't know how to fire the gun. I don't know why. Could be they got a report back. Kerry got a report back the day before, and they didn't know how to fire the tomahawks. I don't know who's running a tomahawk. Who's on the ships anymore? I was on a ship a few years ago, the aircraft carrier. It was like watching a ballet dancer, the young guys who fly the F-A-18 Hornets. They're my heroes. Just astounding. The officer class, old-time, real Navy. Now you go below the decks. I thought I was in a junior high school. I was teaching in a junior high. It was like gangbangers walking around with their dungarees hanging down under their behind. How does that ship run? That was like the guy who was the aircraft mechanic down below. He's fixing the jet engines? Great. Yeah, I really want to go on a bombing mission to Iraq. I'm going to come back to this guy to fix my engine. Thank you very much. Yes, sir. I mean, yes, ma'am. Take a look at them. Take a look at them, what they're promoting now in this country. No wonder the Russians are laughing at us. But then take a look at white males like John Kerry. What, he's a bargain because he's a white male? I mean, he looks the typical aristocrat, you know, the kind of guy who was an arista in high school, tall with the jaw. He was an SOB from the get-go. I take one look at John Kerry from the day he entered the scene. He was the type of kid in high school who would step on your foot in gym class and then say that you stepped on his foot. That's what he looked like to me. Look where he is. You know the type. You know what rises to the top. You know how it works. In that field, in politics? Are you kidding me? What, the best and the brightest go to the top? Let me tell you something, my friends. The best and the brightest don't go into politics. The best and the brightest are not in the political world. The best and the brightest are not in the political world, which is why we have Harry Reid there. Which is why we have John Boehner there. Which is why we have Nancy Pelosi. Ba-ba-ba-boo, ba-beep-ba-boo, ba-ba-ba-boo. Should we go to war or not? Spoke to my grand-ba-ba-ba-boo. And I said, Ninny, should we go to war in Syria? Well, normally I'm against war, but Ninny, we should go to war because of the children. That's the ex-speaker of the House who pushed Obamacare down our throats. Ninny, should we go to war? I couldn't believe what I'm listening to. It's the theater of the absurd. The world through your stomach. How much can a person eat? Do you ever think about how much food you push through your gut? It's awful. Sometimes I have like an overwhelming idea of how consumptive we are as beings. I added up all the eggs I've eaten, all the bread I've eaten over my lifetime. Like the chops, like if you line them up, like let's say you're in a warehouse. And you know, here's Michael.
Here is the food he has consumed at his age by now. So here's a stack of like 8 million eggs, 14 million sauce. You know what I'm saying? 25,000 cartons of butter. I mean, you know, this is before I even understood what food was. Here is Michael since 30 years ago. There'd be crates of avocados, crates of organic tomatoes, tankers full of white wine, truckloads of beer, crates filled with vodka. All through one human being. No wonder we'd get sick and die young. You know, when you think about it, how much can your body take? You have to become almost Zen monk-like. They don't live long anyway. That's another myth. You know, you go to these monasteries. Oh, man, look at that guy. He leads such a pristine life. Like he licks Mountain Dew in the morning and he chants all day. Died at 68 of a coronary. How do you figure that? What's that from? They're very stressful in monasteries. A very stressful life, incidentally. You think it isn't. It's a pecking order number one. Like there's the head monk, then the second monk, then the third monk, the fourth monk, fifth monk, then there's the peons. And they're, even though they're all chanting, and to the outside they all look like they get along, they don't. They just with a turn of a lip, the guy is put down. He goes into a paroxysm of a nervous breakdown. The only thing that could save America is a conservative party. A conservative party. The only thing that could save America is a Putin-like person running this country. And I've said it. Only a right-wing person can save America from the psychosis of liberalism. There, I got it out of my system. Now I can move on. Let's take some calls. WABC in New York. O-R-Y, Ori, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. You took the words right out of my mouth. I am one of those young people who have switched from Hannity to Michael Savage, and I listen digitally, as you say, so you're right on with that. I just want to say about Wallbanger, I think that his demotion, with his boring, irrelevant babbling about the Constitution and Reagan, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, God, how can they do it? How many times can you mention Constitution, Ronald Reagan? I can't take it. It sounds to me like a bad history teacher in high school that I threw ink at.
It is, and he's also unable to ever win an argument with anybody. But I think that this entity that is Sean Hannity is really the Republican Party, and that you see both of them are dim bulbs. He's dying just like the GOP is dying. They're both dim bulbs, and it's people like Michael Savage and people like Alan West and Ted Cruz, real men who tell the truth and fight for real values, who will save the right wing and ultimately the nation.
Well, I hope so. I love Alan West. I wish he'd run for the presidency. I frankly think he'd make, I know he'd be a great president, but I know that the Republican establishment is so against Alan West that it's almost impossible odds. It's almost like Moses having to part the Red Sea, Alan West running for higher office. Look what they did to him in Florida. Right. Okay. One man's opinion. That's all. It's a weird night. Missed warning. Police told Navy last month gunman was unstable. You hear? The Navy? What do you mean, say Navy? Oh, yeah, yes, sir. I mean, yes, ma'am. What are you, Navy? There is no Navy. You heard there's no England anymore? There's no Navy anymore. There's no Navy anymore. It's like a floating brothel with propellers now. A Rhode Island officer reported Navy Yard shooter Aaron Alexis to Naval Station Police last month after Alexis told cops he was hearing voices through a wall and three people were following him. So you know what the Naval officer said? This is not the whole story that Fox News reported. The police officer said to Mr. Alexis, I love Mr. Alexis. Oh, Mr. Alexis, will you come with me, please? I know you just murdered 12. They told Mr. Alexis, listen, I swear to God, the guy says three people are following him. He described them. So the cop says to him, I'm reading now from the beginning. I advised the shooter to stay away from the individuals that are following him and to notify the Newport Police Department if they attempt to make contact with him. So the cop was crazier than him. Is that the proper thing for a cop to tell a guy? You got a nut who says three people are following me. They're imagining him. So now you tell him, don't talk to those people and notify the police department if the people who aren't there attempt to make contact with you. The cop should now be taken in. Is he on the same medication? This guy was promoted in the Navy, even though they knew he was a nut talking to himself. So what's unusual about that in the Obama government and the new military under Obama? Navy Yard. They don't build ships there anymore. They don't make ordnance. Navy Yard means a campus for contractors. I didn't say they should be hurt or shot. Don't get me wrong. But stop with the Navy. It's not a Navy Yard the way you think of it. With blowtorches building, you know, iron on the side of it. They're not building guns. Navy. Yes, sir. I mean, yes, ma'am. Right. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. With the whistle. No, not there anymore.
No, sir. No, whistle me aboard. No, whistle me aboard. No, sir. There's no more ships being built, no ordnance being built at the naval yard, the Navy shipyard. No ships being built. No ordnance being created. It's a contractor's haven. And this nut was put into the nerve network of the U.S. Navy to refresh our computers for the U.S. Marine Corps. It's unbelievable to me. And by the way, there was a link yesterday that I talked about on the show that he went to Thailand for some invisible trip. No one knows what he went for. And I said on this show, that if I were the FBI, I'd dispatch, well, you have FBI agents everywhere. You have to look into where this guy was in Thailand. What was he doing there? You look into it. What was he doing there? Studying recipes? We don't know. But you look into it. You say, well, what was he doing there? There was just a mass shooting here from a nut on an army, on a Navy base. So you say, well, what was he doing in Thailand? No one looked into that. No follow-up. But did you hear the FBI director? Let's get the FBI director. This is the new FBI. Assistant FBI Director Valerie Parlave in clip six. Well, we're coming back from the lanes yesterday. The girls and I were having a little R&R. Well, listen to clip six.
At this time, we believe that Mr. Alexis entered building 197 at the Navy Yard with a shotgun.
Yeah,
We do not have any information at this time that he had an AR-15 in his possession.
Yeah, right.
We also believe Mr. Alexis may have gained access to a handgun once inside the facility and after he began shooting.
Yeah, we also think, all right, we got an AR-15 here. We have a code 903-0204. Clear the area, will you? The girls and I have to step out onto the plaza now. We have the microphone. Now, let's have the plaza cleared, please. All right, girls, we're going to go out on the plaza now and give another important speech about the AR-15 and the 43-902. What a bunch of idiots. I'll be right back. I can't take it. Can you?
Join the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Look, it's not all bad. There's always a silver lining. If I had believed that things are what they appear to be and that everything is black, I don't think I could have gotten up in the morning when I was 7, let alone the age I'm at now. And I was the first to tell you that there'd actually be some positive benefits to Obama's bumbling and madness in this, being led around by his nose by the four horsewomen of the apocalypse and God knows who else. I told you that this bombing madness and this war against Syria by Obama is going to have a benefit in some regard because it will push the immigration madness to the back burner. I'll read it to you. President Obama's decision to ask lawmakers to back a military strike on Syria could have a far-reaching impact on the rest of his administration's agenda as the debate pushes off votes on some critical items early in the president's second term. Congress has to put on the back burner a laundry list of pressing issues as members return this week to debate whether to punish the Syrian government, blah, blah, blah. But no issue will likely be more critical to the Obama administration than immigration. Providing amnesty for more than 50 to 60 million illegal aliens is a major plank of the Obama second-term agenda, and he wanted that in order to make sure that America would never again have a rational public to vote on anything. See, let's say you take their number of 11 million. You know they lie about everything. The budget is always double of what they say it's going to be. So let's say there's 25 million. That means there's 30 million who'll bring in another 30 million over a five-year period. If they don't speak English, how can they know what the politicians are doing? That's exactly what the politicians want, is an idiocy. Doesn't mean they're bad people. I don't speak Spanish at all. I speak a few words. If I moved to Mexico, I would have no idea what politicians are saying, so I don't blame the Mexican people. But this is what these demagogues want, which is an idiocy for an electorate. So now you have 30 million people who can vote who don't know what's going on. They're all told, vote Democrat. That's the end of America as you know it. But here it comes that they now have to push this off. With the debate now focused squarely on Syria, few of the frauds in Congress are talking about an immigration overhaul right now. The bill itself has been put into the Republican-led House with no votes on the horizon for immigration. Can you believe this? Now, listen to what one of his spokesmouths say. I don't think Syria helps the president on immigration. He's spent his political capital. Oh, I see. He says it the other way. Okay, that's good. After Syria, Congress's most immediate task is passing a temporary spending bill
That's the sequester. So they're going to have to fight over that. So they're not going to get around to granting amnesty to the illegal aliens like they thought they will. So in a way, this is a benefit to the Americans who work for a living. Again, I want to be very clear that the Mexicans and other illegal aliens do not speak good English doesn't mean that they're stupid. It means that they're not from this country. As I said, if I was an illegal alien in Guatemala or Honduras or El Salvador or Mexico, I wouldn't understand what the politicians are doing. And I would vote for anyone who helped me become a citizen there if that's what I wanted, given the benefits in America that they're going to be entitled to. That will be a Democrat. So, you know, serious strike campaign sidelines, push for amnesty for illegal aliens. That's a benefit, actually, to America. Maybe this is God's hand at work. I don't really know. I can't really say. I don't know whose hand's at work here, but it certainly isn't a rational hand right now. It's an irrational hand. There's something very wrong with the picture. Chris Walachensky was told on Fox News by President Obama that he's willing to negotiate with Russia and Syria over a proposal to have Assad turn over chemical weapons. Well, what does that mean? Willing to negotiate? Are you kidding me? You know that that's a cover for bombing. Meanwhile, every poll shows voters oppose U.S. action. New poll says majority of voters say U.S. has lost respect under Obama. So this is what's going on in your country today. Amateur hour would be a polite way to put it. This is not amateur hour. Kevin, on KCMO, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
It's not my intention to call Obama a rat, but a rat's one of their fatal flaws is that they can't regurgitate. And Obama cannot change his mind. He cannot back up. He cannot be wrong. He cannot correct himself too much on anything. And that's part of why we're here.
What do you mean? His ego is so frail that he can't say he was wrong or maybe he rethought it?
Yes. He can't change. He doesn't even know that that exists.
Well, okay. Psychologically, I've done a profile on him for years now. Here is a man who had the skids greased for him from the time he was an elite child in Hawaii. You know that and I know that. People bowed in front of him. They greased the skids. They gave him a scholarship to Punahou. He was then sent to Occidental on a scholarship. He went to Columbia on a scholarship. Through affirmative action, he became the editor of the Law Review. One thing after another was done for him with people bowing before him. He's never had to say I'm wrong or I thought it through and I did the wrong thing ever to anybody.
He doesn't have reverse.
You know, you mentioned the word reverse. Do you remember who was it amongst our political class who said that she wanted to reset the relationship with Russia? Do you remember who that was?
Offhand.
Yeah. I think that was Hillary Clinton. Boy, did they reset the relationship with Russia. They've almost brought us to war with Russia. That's how they've reset the relationship with Russia. The world is in chaos because of this administration. From Libya to Egypt to Syria. You cannot name a place on earth that hasn't been wrecked by Obama and his psychotic academicians who are pursuing an adolescent agenda that they act as though they're sitting in a classroom. Let's pray to God that somebody steps in and saves this country and the world from this madman.
Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
The reason I'm so beloved in the media and so hated by the political class is really simple, actually, when you think about it. I mean, think about it. I'm hated by the politicians and kind of loved by the people who listen to the show. And it's going to get bigger as the, God willing, as the year goes on, assuming I'm still here. The fact is that I've written many books and I have a humorous streak. And I have a certain easygoing style on the radio when I don't lose it, when I don't get mad. And I have a keen sense of the absurd, which makes me very popular.
You see, there's not much of a sense of the absurd in conservative talk radio. They're very stuck in the mud, you know, guys. They're not bad guys, but they're the kind of stuck in the mud guys that don't, you know, breed the kind of audience I have. Well, let's say attract. I'll give you an example. An article comes out, top Congress moneymakers. So naturally, it's to show you the Republicans are the richest, right? Daryl Issa is worth $355 million. Number two is Michael McCall of Texas, worth $114 million, and so on. So you go down the list, and you see number nine is Senator Dianne Feinstein. She's only number nine at $41 million. But they don't say what Richard Blum is worth, the husband. I mean, what do they think, was stupid? $41 million is a piker's amount of money compared to what that family is worth. Or you go down the list to others on the list who have been playing the nepotism game. You know, you put the old lady into Congress, and then you rake in the money on the other side. So naturally, they skew it, and they say, ooh, it's all Republicans who are rich. Nah, not the Democrats. Yeah, right. As if there's something wrong with being rich. It's how you make it, my friend, not how much you have. It's whether you stole it or not, or you created body armor that didn't work in Iraq. You know, that kind of thing. So it's real simple, or shopping carts to the moon. So, yeah, all right, rich again. 50 richest members of Congress, the wealth keeps growing. How many of them pay taxes, though? How many of them paid full 39.7 or whatever, 39.5, as opposed to dividend income, Schmidt, how many transferred it to their husbands or wives, whatever. It's all a game. And it goes on and on. You know why? Because we don't have an Elliot Ness. You see, remember the show when, years ago called The Untouchables, when the FBI was created with Elliot Ness? Elliot Ness went after the Untouchables, like, who was it? Frank Nitti and Al Capone. Who is the Elliot Ness of our America today? There are none. You're telling me the head of the FBI? Well, we're going to come back from the lanes now, the girls and I. We're going to look into that. Yeah, we'll look into that subway to nowhere. Yeah, nowhere in the false the construction jobs, the train to nowhere. Yeah, you'll look into it. Malarkey, you'll look into it. There is no Elliot Ness in the FBI. There is no Elliot Ness in the NSA. There is no Elliot Ness anywhere because Obama is a dictator who made certain that any Elliot Ness who could have been there was decapitated by being thrown out of the services. And the same is going on in every branch of the U.S. Armed Services. Every potential hero has been thrown out of the military or forced out of the military. Anyone who would have stood up to the coming dictatorship in this country. And I will repeat again. I started to say it last night, and I got sidetracked by my brilliant mind. Remember I warned you what Bush would do in the last 3 months of his administration? Those of you who listened to me for all these years, I said it was in August, September. I said he's not through yet. Do you remember what Bush did in the last 3 months, or his handlers? Remember how they crashed the economy? They did it. They crashed the economy by letting Wall Street go haywire. Okay, and then Obama became president. Well, Obama doesn't have just 3 months left. He has 3 months left of year number one of term number two. Let me remind you, Obama has 3 years and 3 months left. And if you think that what Bush did in 3 months was catastrophic, you are right. But you haven't seen anything yet as to what Obama is liable to do and likely to do in 3 years and 3 months, especially when there is no press to rein him in and no opposition party to speak out against it. It's very worrisome indeed. And this is not simply rhetoric, nor am I trying to be comedic in the political arena at this point. I may have a sense of the absurd, but I think it's quite absurd that we have no Elliot Ness. And I will ask again, who is watching the watchers? Who will watch the watchers? Here's a shocker. Pope Shock says church should stop obsessing over gays and abortion. We have to find a new balance, said the Pope. That's interesting. That's an interesting one. So now the Catholic Church is in favor of abortion? You talk about a new marketing campaign. That's interesting. How do Catholics feel about the church and it shouldn't obsess over abortion? That's interesting. I guess the Pope wants to decapitate the Catholic Church itself. See, there's a limit to liberalism. At a certain point, liberalism becomes suicide. What is the point of a Catholic Church if it's not conservative? What does it stand for? Rituals? And wafers? What is it for? Anyway, let's move on. Let us move on the Savage Nation. There's lots of callers out there. Let's go to WABC in New York. It's a beautiful night in San Francisco. Very summery. I personally don't like it. I wish it was snowing like in Helsinki, but all right, I'll live with it. Colin, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. I am a big fan. I am a Catholic priest, and I heard you mention a Pope's comments that apparently...
Pope says, the church should stop obsessing over gays and abortion. We have to find a new balance. How do you feel about that?
Well, as a Catholic priest, I'm pretty distressed about it, to tell you the truth. I don't think he realizes how the American media spins things.
Right. 6 months into his papacy, Pope Francis sent shockwaves to the Roman Catholic Church on Thursday with the publication of his remarks that the church is going to obsess with abortion, gay marriage, and contraception, and that he had chosen not to talk about those issues despite recommendations from critics. His surprising comments came in a lengthy interview in which he criticized the church for putting dogma before love and for prioritizing moral doctrines over serving the poor and marginalized. He sounds like a stone-hearted Marxist to me. You see, again, you can't say because he's the Pope he's above criticism. He's becoming very political right now. He's suddenly no longer a religious leader. Now he's a political leader. And now that he's stepped into the world of politics, we have the right to criticize him as a politician, I think. Thank you for the call. At least that's how I see it. See, when they step out of the pulpit and become political, I believe that we have the right to say, wait a minute, Pope, you are now violating the separation of church and state. And if you're stepping into the business of the state, we have a right to comment on it, Mr. Pope. At least that's how I see it. And he says, what, putting dogma before love? Well, let me tell you what happens when you put love above everything. You wind up with a cesspool called America. Because it's not love to give everyone a pass. Let me tell you that right now. You can't give murderers love. You can't give child rapists love. You can't give love to Al-Qaeda members who are lurking everywhere around us in this country. Love? No, no, my friend. Watch out with the love BS. There's a limit to what you can do with love. Well, love is wonderful when you can afford it, not in a time like ours. And as the early Israelis learned about love, they learned to carry a Bible in one hand and an Uzi in the other. That's why there's still a state of Israel. If they had only carried the Bible and only focused on love, Israel never would have been formed and there'd be no Jewish nation whatsoever, for better or for worse, however you look at it. Okay? Love is a nice doctrine. You can save love for, when it's appropriate, like in a bedroom or in a nursery or in a schoolroom. But this whole idea of universal love to strangers is absurd, frankly. I don't mean you have to be rude and nasty to strangers. I'm not that way. But you can't let strangers step on you, can you? I mean, think about it. There's a limit to love. What does love mean? And as I said to you many times in the Savage Nation, let me give you a little educated statement on the word love. We're limited by our language, English. In English, there's only one word for love. It means love. I love my wife. I love my girlfriend. I love my dog. I love this pizza. I love my computer. I love my car. I love those tires. I love my shoes. All the same word, love. But in Latin, there are 16 verbs for love. And so there's a different verb for I love my pizza than I love my wife. A different verb for I love my tires from I love my life. And so you have to be understanding and cognizant of the fact that we're limited by our language. I'll be right back.
Savage.
When the vehicle stopped perpendicular to her car, the passenger sighted her trunk. Her first thought was that she should go inside, shut the door, and call 911. She turned the key, popped the lock, but stayed outside, waiting to see what this was about. Both doors of the Mercedes opened, and two men emerged. They were stocky, dressed in black suits, their hair cut short, Marine style. Their expressions were unsympathetic, their eyes steady. The driver remained where he was. The other man came over. Dover's heart rate quickly doubled. Miss Griffith, the man asked as he approached. He wouldn't have asked if he didn't already know the answer. She said nothing. I'd like to talk to you about your interest in Hawk Industries, he said. I'm kind of tired, she said, backing into the room. Can this wait? I'll only need a minute, the man said. Maybe tomorrow, Dover told him. She stepped inside quickly and shut the door, from which you forgot to remove the key. The young woman heard the key turn. The curtains were drawn and it was dark outside. She switched on an unsteady floor lamp. There was no rear exit and there were no windows in the back.
She hurried to where she had left her phone plugged in on the night table. She activated it as the man entered. "Please put it down," he told her. "I'm calling the police." "The sheriff's office is about a half hour from here," he informed her. "You might get a deputy who was already on the road and could be here in 10 or 15 minutes. Or he may be off in another direction entirely. I don't care. Miss Griffith, it doesn't have to be this way." The intruder's hand slipped inside his blazer and remained there, behind the lapel. "Please be reasonable. I only need a few minutes." Dover hesitated. The man had left the door open. His associate had moved from the driver's side and was standing just a few paces behind his partner. "What do you want to know?" she asked. Her mouth was dry. The words sounded like rice paper. "Put the phone down and we can talk," he said. She continued to hold it. He remained where he was, his hand inside his jacket. She didn't think he would shoot her, but her odds seemed a little better off if she cooperated. She had gone back in time about 150 years. "You have no right to make those demands," she said. "I haven't done anything wrong." "You misrepresented yourself as an investigator with the ONI," the man said. "No, that is the truth." That's the Office of Naval Intelligence. I'm reading from A Time for War. Well, you get the picture. This is my novel, A Time for War, which has a lot to do with a character named Dover. Should I read to you the love scene between Jack and Dover? Because, you know, if it's a novel about war and about peace and about espionage, it's actually very well done. I think that they're on the boat together on the Grand Banks, and she comes up. His face must have registered the discomfort he felt because Dover flushed slightly. "Sorry," she said, "that was stupid of me." "No, it wasn't," he insisted. "It was just not a question I expected." "Please forget I asked it," she said. She washed the statement down with the rest of her beer, then went to get another. "I'm not going to do that," Jack said. He sat back, sipped a second beer. "Look, my relationship with my first wife, Rachel, is complicated. Please, you don't have to tell me." "I want to," he said. "Doc, Abe, all our friends, they're tired of hearing me be confused." "You're a fresh canvas, Dover, and you're smart and curious, and you analyze data. You may see something the rest of us have missed." She relaxed slightly. Jack goes on. "We were married for 10 years. It ended 2.5 years ago. It probably ended long before, but that's when we pulled the plug. She was a model, 5'9", green eyes, black hair, a real night owl. We met while I was doing a segment for the World of the Runway Model. She segued from that to flipping houses. One of those planners had a real estate license just in case. Her modeling career ended. She is good at being prepared. Taste change, anorexia is in, hips are out. You never know. Also, she would get bored with things real quick. She bagged college after 6 months, took up modeling, sold houses, studied nutrition, so she had something else to do when the housing market collapsed. Always a step ahead. She's got a terrific practice now, training vegans in Tiburon. That's across the bay in Marin County. Alone, he grew wistful. She's living with a big-shot tax attorney. I resent him. I'm reading from A Time for War. "Because, I wish I knew," Jack admitted. "He treats her well. He makes her laugh. He's been cordial to me the 2 times we've met. Even if it's this, I'm a Harvard grad, noblesse oblige, like he's just a little bit better than me. Anyway, what about you?" "I dated in college a lot," she said. "They were trust fund kids, bad boys, scholars. I date in Suitland, career military, career diplomats, career bureaucrats. I always got along best with the guys who could put their work aside and concentrate on me. Do you ever use number one on speed dial?" "Never have," Jack said, "but it's the only human connection I've got left with her." He stood suddenly. "Let's take our beers outside on deck. I want to see if I can learn this relaxing thing." He wasn't sure if this was a move or if his guard was just weighed down. Whichever it was, Dover rose and smiled and seemed happy to follow his lead. Maybe she was just tired, too. They went out onto the flybridge, followed by Eddie. It was chilly, and Jack offered her a blanket. She said she was used to the cold, actually enjoyed it. He showed her to the helm seats, but she remained standing. So did Jack. "I'm not sure it's working," he said. "All I am is tired, but my brain's still working." "Look up," she said. Jack turned astern to view the stars. They were unusually bright and realized why. It was past 4 a.m. He wasn't usually out at this hour. The lights of the city did not throw as much light in the sky as he was accustomed to. "Does that relax you?" Dover asked. "Frankly, it bores me," he said. "That's not what we're going for. I don't get philosophical about the stars, eternity, the cosmos. I tend not to think about the things I can't impact." "So what do you think about?" "Well, when I'm not thinking about work." "Yeah," she smiled. "That's the drill." He looked across the water. "I think about now and a little beyond. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy things like wine and beer and good company. I can appreciate the dynamics of what's going on around me, like the harbor and the life that's under it or on it or above it." And he goes on, and then she says, "That's fair, a little grim, but fair." Dover was watching him with eyes that sparkled with reflected lights from the city from other boats. There was a moment he liked. They were far more interesting to him than the stars. What about you, Jackass? What do you think about? Well, I'm still optimistic enough to look ahead, she said. I think about the big things, the usual, I guess. Eventually having a relationship, a family, she laughed. I guess I'll have to think about a new job, a new career after what just happened. I'm not convinced of that, Jack said. I still think there's something big we can pin on that. Dover said. That's not relaxing. That's work. She drank a little beer, leaned with her back against the rail. She was a dark silhouette against the darker waters. And then she goes on and she talks about the thing that they're involved in. And then they go on to the next statement. And he says, well, what happens next? What do you want to happen next, he asked. That did not come out the way it had sounded in his head. Spoken, it was less a question than an invitation. The time between his asking and her answering seemed uncomfortably long. Bet, she said, finishing the beer. That was no help. How about Eddie? Are you ready for sleep? Dover smiled. I didn't say sleep. Jack grinned boyishly. I wasn't sure I heard correctly. They went below.
Savage. This is an encore presentation of the Savage Nation.
Now, there are some who say, well, you know, this gives the initiative to Putin. And who cares how it came up?
This is Bill Clinton saying about Putin leading in Syria. Who cares how it came up? You've heard about leading from behind. How about leading with your behind? Doesn't this show you that we have a Democrat mentality without any character? They don't care. They're outcome-based politicians. There's no dignity. No dignity. It doesn't matter how it came up, in other words, to him. So now Putin is the putative Secretary of State of the United States of America. Bill Clinton says it doesn't matter how it happened. All of a sudden, they're in front of the No War campaign, even though Nancy Pelosi was foaming at the mouth to drop bombs. Engel dropped bombs. Every psychopathic anti-gun liberal in America wanted to drop bombs. Shame on them! Onto the fifth generation! Shame on those lying SOBs! Those bums! Those louts! Those psychos! How can you live in a country that stinks like this? It's like working in a sanitation pile. I feel like the nation is a nation of, like a sanitation pile in a dump with people in nice suits and ties. And believe me, I'm not alone in this. The Congress, the media is so detested in this country, but they don't know what to do. Here's the reason you stopped listening to talk radio, many of you. Maybe you're scanning. I know why you stopped listening. Because you listen to the dunces on the left, you don't want to hear it anymore. You know what it led to. It led to Feinstein and the post offices. It led to Obama, the anti-war candidate, wanting to drop bombs without thinking. And you said, who the hell, I don't want to do it anymore. That's if you're a liberal. I'm tuning out, okay? Those on the right have listened to the fraudulent Republicans now. They know there's no Republican Party. They were misled by Wallbanger and his minions, who went to the White House with Bush the genius, and now suddenly he's boasting about going to the White House with Bush. That's Wallbanger's claim to fame. I was invited to the White House, a little boy from Franklin Square, or wherever he came from, Rockville Center. Well, my friend, it takes an education to understand what you just said about yourself. Wallbanger doesn't even understand he put himself down. He doesn't even get it. The man's been a water carrier for the Republican Party for the day he began a radio as a fill-in. He steps on his words. Every other word is He ordered to advertise Tums. They could just bleed in a T on top of it. Tum. He'd have a big sponsor. Every other word is and gulp. If he started the radio today, he couldn't work on a local station. That's Wallbanger. Then you got the Wallbanger minions because he promotes their books and products. They call him a great one. Oh, you're a great one. No, you're a great one. No, you're a great one. Hey, great one. Are you a great one? No, I'm a great one. You're a great one. It's like an Art Carney show. Wearing a beaver cap somewhere in a bad club. Hello, great one. Why don't you start the Great One Club? Give out beaver caps with long tails. Raccoon skin caps with long tails. Hello, great one. I mean, it's insane. So people stop listening to radio. Then I come along late in the day, stuck in Siberia here in the Siberia time slot. Hopefully not for long. And all of a sudden, you think, what the heck? Who's this guy? He doesn't sound like he's one of them. Doesn't sound like he's one of us. Who is he? Yeah, I'm not the Lone Ranger. I'm just a talk show host. And if you think I'm alone, you're mistaken. There are tens of millions of Americans who see things as I do, who say things that I do, and they don't know what the hell to do to get their country back. You say, well, how did this happen? Well, okay, why go into the whole story? The number one problem is when we lost the media, we lost the country. The job of the media is not to be the lapdog of the administration or of the political class. The job of the media is to be the watchdog for the people. And once the watchdogs were, let us say, taken off the job, and they have been, either they died off or they were sold out, and they left the print media, they left the broadcast media by and large, the politicians fell into the state that they're in today, which is a sense of drunken power, absolute power. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. You understand that. We are witnessing absolute power at work where there's no checks and balances. So in my day, there was corruption. There's always been corruption. Going back to George Washington, I know many of you think he was a saint. He wasn't. He was a fine man, and he was also a politician, Machiavellian, into his landed class, kept slaves, etc. He wasn't a perfect man. And there was corruption, but they were kept in line by the colonial press to a certain extent. And the press existed in this country almost until, by and large, when the few men who run the journalism schools, and I can name them, there's two of them, two or three of them run the journalism factories, who weeded out anyone with an independent mind, just as they did in the universities, weeded out certainly anyone who didn't buy the party line. In other words, anyone who was not useful to the Communist Party USA, no matter what name it's called, CPUSA, call it progressives, call it liberals, doesn't matter. Whoever was not a member of the Politburo party line, didn't support the Politburo party line, never got into a journalism school. And that was the end of America as we know it. So now we have a fragmentary underground press called the Internet. We have a Samizdat on the radio. Those of you from the Soviet Union know what I'm talking about. This broadcast is very much like the underground radio broadcasts of the Soviet Union during the Solzhenitsyn years, when people were desperate to get the message out of what their corrupt government was doing. And that's where we are today. The same president who is breaking U.S. federal law, the Arms Export Control Act, to send machine guns and other weapons to murderers and Islamists in Syria, wants to take your bullets and guns away. And by the way, I may have broken the code on why Big Sis was suddenly moved out of her position in Homeland Security to wreck the University of California at Homeland. Remember she bought a billion bullets? Remember that big scandal? She kept buying hundreds of millions of bullets. Remember that? Nobody knew where the bullets were going. Then IRS bought the bullets. Every department under Obama was buying up every bullet in America, drying up the supply of lead and of brass and of gunpowder. And we didn't know why. We said, well, they're trying to dry up. I said, wait a minute, maybe those bullets are going to Syria, to the Islamists. Maybe they were plotting this all along, and they needed bullets. I don't know where the bullets went. I don't know. It's just crazy. I shouldn't even be asking the question. This is a job for Ted Cruz. This is a job for God knows who in the Republican Party, Rand Paul. The few voices that are left. The few voices, the few and far between, they should be screaming day and night, but how much can they do? I understand that. I don't care. You know, I really don't care what they can do, what they can't do. We have to keep talking about it. And we're going to talk about the person that Kerry and McCain were relying upon for trusting the Syrian opposition is a lobbyist for the opposition groups, a liar who never got her PhD. It gets worse by the second to see what this rebel government of ours is doing to this country. Number two, this just came out minutes ago. U.S. weapons that were stolen from Libya raids are now in the hands of enemies in Syria, and our special forces have been pulled out of the country. Highly sensitive, high-quality U.S. military equipment stored in Libya was stolen over the summer by groups aligned and working with terrorist organizations. And, are you ready to this? Hear this? That's why special forces were pulled out of Libya. They were afraid of being killed by their own equipment. This is what your country is under this. Let me control myself. This is America under the fraud in the White House. Now, before I do anything else, let me give you my phone number, 855-407-282. That's the Savage Nation. We're going to talk about the disgraced researcher who Obama, Kerry, and McCain used to tell us that the opposition in Syria are all good guys and not to worry about them. She looks like Mata Hari, acts like Mata Hari, talks like Mata Hari, and also claimed a fake PhD. Now, to those of us with real doctorates from real universities, we never talk about this, but let me tell you something. You know how you hear about guys who were never in the war, who any military, and they have fake medals like Medals of Honor, Silver Stars, Bronze Stars, and they walk around with them making believe they're war heroes? And there are people who track them down and rightly so make a big issue of people with fake, you know, medals. There's nothing worse to me than a fake PhD, because I killed myself for a great PhD from one of the world's great universities. It was my lifetime dream, and I earned it. This fraud, Elizabeth Obeigi, presented herself as a PhD from Georgetown, and as a result, that moron McCain and that slack-jawed moron Kerry cited her research as to why we should go in and take out Assad. She was fired because she has no PhD. Can you believe this? Now, if you look into this story, it gets even worse. And I've heard, Tayshia, that Georgetown was still, that this liar had received her undergraduate degree and master's there, but was not currently registered. I know what it's like to pass oral exams, and I also know what it's like to wait to get your PhD. It's not like waiting for a, let us say, a an affinity card from an oil company or a, let's say, well, whatever. We don't have to make a trivial example out of it. The fact is that real PhDs from real universities with real dissertations that are published in real journals are extremely important to those who earn them. And this is a fraud. Now, why is it important to you? Because John Kerry and John McCain cited her testimony as a prelude to war and why we should trust the Syrian opposition. You got to listen to clip number one. I don't know if you heard this, but my crack staff dug up Kerry and McCain talking about this fraudulent lead from this girl. Listen.
John, over the weekend, the Wall Street Journal ran an important op-ed by Dr. Elizabeth Obeigi. I hope you saw it. A Syria analyst at the Institute for the Study of War spent a great deal of time inside Syria, including just this month, and I want to read her assessment.
You
of the situation
idiot,
on the ground, and I
you
quote the
idiot.
Story.
You're ashamed to the McCain name.
Conventional wisdom holds that the extremist elements are completely mixed in with the more moderate rebel groups. This isn't the case. Moderates and extremists wield control over distinct territory.
He couldn't
contrary
even read
to
the
many
word wield.
Media accounts, the war in Syria is not being waged entirely or even predominantly by dangerous Islamist and Al-Qaeda diehards.
Now, that's John McCain, the dumbest man in the history of Annapolis, ashamed to the McCain family lineage. His father was a great admiral. His grandfather was a great commander. And this one is like the dumb sheep in the family. John McCain, we are cursed with as one of the worst people in the history of the U.S. Senate, a warmonger, but now a lunatic, who frankly should be removed for senility. He believes what this fraudulent PhD wrote and cites this and tells it to the golfer in the White House? Be right back.
Savage.
I'd like to begin with a little hippie music. Again, please, Ray, play some hippie music, anything in the queue. And we'll go into the best U.S. cities for hippies. You think all the hippies have burned out or faded away, you're wrong. They're out there. And while some think they're still busily making love, not war, you're wrong. And here at a magazine called The Stately, they went out to find communities where they're heavily concentrated. And here we are. To determine this, they used the formula based on, one, marijuana availability and legality, number of stores selling hemp, local counterculture icons, tie-dye availability, hippie festivals, so-called progressive government, intensity of Occupy protests, and a Facebook poll. In the end, eStately.com determined these places are the 17 best U.S. cities for hippies. So let's begin, turn off the music, with city number 17 on the hippie list. Number 17, hello, Arcata, California. Arcata, California, the scent of patchouli oil is so strong in Arcata that it can be smelled from space. While this hasn't been confirmed yet, it is a fact that Arcata is the first city in America to elect a majority of its city council members from the Green Party. It passed the Nuclear Weapons Free Zone Act in 1989. Isn't that superb of them? No one knows how much of the city's population is dependent on a large marijuana industry that's central to Northern California's economy. But let's just say the locally sourced and smokable veggie is paying for a lot of organic produce at the local co-ops. Isn't that touching? Well, let me tell you, all you self-righteous potheads over in Northern California, you've decimated the environment. You have destroyed the forests. You've ripped off the streams. You've killed the salmon. Don't walk around with such righteousness up your you-know-what. You are worse than big oil. Coming in at number 16 is Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, infidels in Bloomington, Indiana. If you're listening to me on 95.9 FM and WFDM in Indianapolis or WXLW at 950 on the dial, let me tell you something. That's a place where hippies can let their freak flag fly. Where is Bloomington, Indiana? I have no idea. Apparently, it's in the southern part of Indiana. It's a hippie-filled college town. Original hippies meet up with hippies in training from Indiana University at Laughing Planet, where they feast on burritos filled with steamed squash, kale, and God knows what else fell off the floor. In San Francisco, coming in at number 15, my hometown, KSFO 560 on the dial. Okay, here's the question. I'm going to go down the list today of the 17 best U.S. cities for hippies, but I'm going to ask you a question that's quite pertinent. How do you cope living in hippie-infested cities? Because as I said at the beginning, old flower children never die. They just lose their petals. Coming at number 14, Manitou Springs, Colorado. We are heard on KREL in Colorado Springs, 1580 on the AM dial. If you like New Age, if you like mate instead of coffee, and if you want to legally buy weed in a store, Manitou Springs is a place that's both mellow and insane. Sometimes called the hippie Mayberry, the town at the base of Pikes Peak is a haven for the artsy spiritual dropout losers. The city was once ruled by Mayor Bud Ford, a down-to-earth loser hippie who wears a tie-dye and looks like the dead Jerry Garcia. Hello, Manitou Springs, Colorado. And I can do the hard news. I can do the soft news. I can do no news. And I can do something in between. But I think what I'm going to do now is stay on this hippie thing, which cities are the most infested by hippies, for one reason. They are the reason America's dying. They are the reason we are the laughingstock of the world. They are the reason that 50% of the population doesn't work and pays no taxes. They are the reason that your children, if they reach maturity, do not marry and have children. That's right, you heard me. Because the ethos of the hippie world is anti-family, anti-nation, anti-military, anti-police, anti-flag, anti-church, anti-synagogue, anti-mother, anti-father, anti-life itself. It's a death-worshipping cult. But you see, they're so enraptured with their lifestyle, and they think they are so enlightened that they think that they're pursuing life rather than death. And that's why I think it's worth doing. I think that we have to rebuild this country town by town and city by city. So if I'm reading to you the enclaves that are infested with hippies and the hippie mentality, let's go to WMAL in Washington. Patrick, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I definitely am not a dirty hippie. I just want to make that, you know, get that cleared for the record. Secondly, I've been listening to you, and I think you're kind of stuck in the 50s, man. I really
do. Is that supposed to hurt me? To me, the clock stopped in 1959 when the Finns came in.
Oh, yes, sir.
But, you know, you got to understand something. It has nothing to do with whether you have long hair or not. I don't care if you have long hair or short hair.
You definitely said a little bit ago while I was on hold, the guys are having long hair and everything.
So you took umbrage at my statement that long hair was sort of a negative?
Yes, sir.
So, okay, understood. Apparently you have a military background, is that correct?
No, sir. I went to military school, but I don't think that...
Because you're calling me sir. I'm no sir. Don't confuse me with a sir.
Sorry, it's a bad habit.
Oh, come on, I'm just kidding. So, Patrick, are you a marijuana smoker?
No, sir, but I definitely stand up for states like Colorado and Washington. You know, stand up for their 10th Amendment rights.
The 10th Amendment is the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So you are referring specifically to the power of what? the power to legalize marijuana?
Well, to not make it illegal. I mean, people can do what they want to in the.
I agree. I personally think that drugs, by and large, should be not legalized per se, but decriminalized. I don't want to see people who use drugs in jail. I'd like to see drug peddlers given the death sentence, by the way.
Savage.